And that was a nice explanation, David, for other people who may not know why they can't see their picture here. So I'd like to call this meeting to order of the Board of Selectmen. It's December 2nd, 2020 at 6 p.m. I'd like to welcome Justin Poria, our new town administrator, to his first meeting and of the Board of Selectmen. And what we do, Justin, is we do a roll call to make sure that all the participants can be heard. So I'm going to start with the board. Mr. Beaupre?
Here.
Mr. Corson?
Here.
Mr. Dyer?
Here.
Mr. Hill?
Here. And just a note that Vika is also online on her mother's name, so.
Okay. Miss Damon is here. Miss Ophant?
Here.
And Mr. Poria?
Here.
Okay, good. We're all here. We can all hear, everyone can hear everyone else, right?
Yep.
All right.
Yes.
Great. So the first thing on the agenda are public comments for items not on the agenda. We have quite a few participants here tonight. And so we'd be happy just to raise your hand if you have something you'd like to bring up. David will be able to probably tell.
Yeah, Ralph would like to say something, and he should be permitted to speak at this point.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, I had somebody in the community come to me this past week, and their family wanted to donate money specifically to the decon room. And I explained to him that the town has no plan at this time to build a decon room. So I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't see any way that we could accept that money. So moving forward, as we discussed the last time, we've been talking about an addition for 12 years. The decon room has taken on a different look. And Donna, you said last time that I talked to you that you said that you had members of the rescue tell you that they did not support the decon room. And I talked to each and every one of the members of the rescue, and they said that that was not true. But they said they did not support paying for the decon room out of a kitty. So what I would like to do is to form some sort of a committee so that we can move forward with this. You've talked about adding on or doing something with the other side of the building, the town office. And after talking about it for 12 years, I think it's time that we move forward. So can we get some sort of a committee together so that we can make some headways? We've had a lot of missed opportunities in the last 12 years where we could have got anywhere from some funding to full funding for such a project that we've been talking about. And the longer we wait, I think there'll just be more missed opportunities. And I don't think that's good for the people of Chabig. So I would just implore you to come up with a committee and see if we can move forward.
Well, Ralph, I'd like to answer your question. I was referring to the fact that they did not want to contribute to it. And that was the deal breaker. We didn't have enough money for that decon thing. And to me, if somebody really wants something, they're going to be willing to contribute to it. So sorry if there was a misunderstanding. So I guess what I would like to say is you've brought this up numerous times. It would be great if you could put together a committee of people who want to work on this, and we'll set up a workshop to once you get the people together and come up with a scope of what it is you actually want to do. I would write a narrative first where you list all of the items that you want this addition to include, and then we have a workshop. And then we decide whether we're going to have a committee that committee goes forward and refines it, or we put it out and get more people if we need more input. But I think that's the place to start. is that we have to see what your vision is first. So if you can put together some people to create a vision, come up with items that you think need to be in there, I think that is a good place to start. And then we have to get to the point where, just like with every project we have in town, where we have wants and needs. What are the things we absolutely need? What are the things we want? And, you know, but it's a process. And you're right. So we need to start the process, go through it, vet it, and determine whether or not we actually want to do it or not. And so I think the first step is, if you can get some people from the fire department and rescue together, get some people from the community, sit down, have a few meetings, brainstorm how it would work. That seems like a beginning of a path forward. And then when you get that together, we'll have a workshop and then see where we go from there. That's just my own personal opinion. I'm going to open it up to the rest of the... Actually, I'll open it up to the rest of the board, but just for a couple of minutes, because we need to have these things be agenda items, not just come up during public discussion. So,
Ralph has his hand up to speak again, as does Caroline Loader. So I'm going to allow Caroline to talk as well, but why don't you let Ralph go first?
Okay.
I just wanted to bring up the fact that you asked me for a quote last year for an addition, and I gave you an itemized quote that I think everybody was pretty happy with, and for an addition to the station, and we're still in the same place we were 12 years ago. So I think I don't know how to move any further forward than that, Donna. I've done everything you've asked me to this point. I'm asking for some input from the board, I guess. We need some buy-in here. I don't know how we can tell you we need this more than we do.
Can you get us another copy of that? I did not see the copy.
The quote?
I did not see that, honestly.
Mark, do you have a copy of it? Because I believe it went to all the board, didn't it? You were involved with that with Alex Buxbaum.
Mark?
Donna and I talked about this specific quote today very briefly, Ralph, and I don't know if we can, I hope we can lay our hands on it. I don't know if I can come up with a copy or not. I was kind of hoping that maybe Marjorie had filed it at the town office somewhere, but I don't know that, to be honest with you. I'm sorry, I wasn't prepared for this tonight.
No, that's quite all right, Mark. I know Marjorie did have the copy of the quote. But I know it did go out to everybody. We need to move forward with this. We keep talking about it, but nothing ever happens, as does a lot of things. And we need to make things happen, and we need to make communication better. And that still, I don't think, is happening.
I just, like, before we go to the public, I just want to ask, Jay, you were on the board before I came back on. Do you have a copy? Did you see a copy of that?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Do you have a copy? Did you see a copy of it?
I don't recall that, but that doesn't mean much these days.
Okay. And I know Bo's off the hook, I guess, unless it was a long time ago. And maybe it was before I got back on, but I don't. I remember people talking about it, but I never saw it. Mark,
Donna, very quickly, it's around a $200,000 estimated cost. That number is a little bit rough, but that's about what I remember for a number. And I think the only thing that you would want to do very quickly is to go down through that, if we can locate it line by line, and just look at what's there, and just double check on, you know, whether concrete has gone up since then, lumber has gone up since then, so on and so forth, to make sure that you're not taking a 1 or 2 year old estimate and acting like it's completely up to date. That's all.
And I one more question, Ralph, does this have a plan with it or is it just a list of numbers?
It should have a plan with it. Marjorie has it had it someplace in the town office. I have nowhere.
You don't have a copy in the fire department office?
No, it's with Marjorie.
Okay, so maybe Alex would still have a copy, but one of the things that I think you could do that would be helpful is to, again, as I said, write down what are all the elements of it. I mean, hopefully we can find this, or if you can follow up with Alex, that's kind of where we are now. Anybody else on the board before I go to Caroline Loder? Bob?
Yeah, I can contact Alex tomorrow morning and ask him if he's still got it.
Okay, that'd be great.
And can I ask Justin if he can look into Marjorie's office, if he can possibly find a copy of it? And I think we shouldn't spend any more time on this and put something on the next agenda.
Thank you, Bo. Okay, Caroline.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Sorry to join in late. I had just heard that we could get a committee together. I caught the tail end, get a committee, get buy-in from the rescue, fire and rescue, and proceed forward. And I just wanted to say that I think fire and rescue, I can only speak for rescue, but rescue has always been on board with having this arrangement, having a decon room. It's kind of 101 in our world. It's surprising to me a little bit that it's that there's so much friction, it seems, in the dialogue. But I don't, again, have any vision to or oversight to that building plan that you were talking about with that I think was backed by Alex. I can't speak to that, but I can speak just on behalf of Rescue that this was always something we thought we were going to have. And I think it's beyond having Rescue sit down and talk about, is this what we need and what makes sense? So I just wanted to offer that up because I think on our end, it's past that. I know there was dialogue about this money should come from the kitty. And I don't know if you have oversight to how that kitty gets spent, but that covers our certifications. It covers having blankets in the ambulance for our patients who cross over on the back of a boat in winter. And it would be, no one's asking me, but I can't even imagine how we would come up with those extra funds out of our kitty to support a decon room. So I just wanted to say. And I think if you're interested in seeing where that money gets spent and allocated, it would be obvious to everyone that's really not available to provide even a base work, groundwork for a decon room. I just wanted to put that out there. I think Ralph might be the only one who's speaking on this topic, but I think it has a lot of buy-in on Rescue. So I just wanted to say that.
Okay, thank you. Let you know, the town was able to try to come up with some money and we did need help in trying to raise the money. And that was just one option. We asked if there were people who would help us make calls and fundraise in the community. And we got no positive responses to help us. And we couldn't do it because it cost, we didn't have the money. Okay. So that's the bottom line with that.
We have Chris Loder also wanting to say a word here.
Okay, thanks. This is for a different subject on the sort of the public comment. So if the other is clear.
Can I just ask them if there's anybody else who wants to speak about the fire rescue before you start?
Yep, exactly.
Okay. I don't see anybody. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So on a different subject, Bo, I suspect that you received this note, but there was a note today from Ann Kirkpatrick, our superintendent and principal, and the note states that next, in 2 weeks, Monday, the 14th, there'll be a low tide in the afternoon, and the CTC will be running, will not be running the 345 and the 445 boat. And therefore the school will be dismissing early to allow for the staff to return home before what would be obviously a very late day. As you know, the CTC is not running because of the dredging. And so my comment is, number one, this is beginning obviously to impact things beyond personal commuting. It may begin to impact transfer of students to and from Yarmouth. And please continue to act with the greatest haste and urgency around getting a dredging plan in place and executed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just to answer that question, we're expecting any day to get a final report from the Army Corps of Engineers, and supposedly in early December we're going to have a public meeting to talk about this exact subject. We have a date for a public referendum town meeting in the end of January to ask the voters to take $150,000 out of the undesignated fund balance to combine with the 100 we already have to pay the down payment, which is $250,000. And the Army Corps has scheduled tentatively to be on Chibig sometime in late fall or early winter next year. We will also have to go back to the voters for another $250,000 that we have to pay when it's finished. And that's where we are. We've worked diligently. I have to commend David Hill, who has spent a lot of time communicating. And that is where we are. And that's the very best news I can give on that topic. Anyone else have something under public discussion?
Well, Christopher's got his hand up again.
Donna, thank you very much for the update. If there's anything that I can do to support the board with communication in the community to get people on board for any of those meetings and for voting towards getting those funds done, please let me know. Super important, and I really appreciate that you guys have been on top of it.
Thank you very much. And yeah, any support to get the word out when those meetings are scheduled. We were hoping we would have heard by now, but that's the Army Corps of Engineers, and we're along for the ride doing the best we can. Thank you.
And Ralph has another point to make.
Yes, Ralph.
And another subject, when is the transfer station going to be ready to accept the ambulance? We had talked about that. Snow's coming, and we had said that we were going to get that up before the snow flies so we can have that at least under cover. I know it's not the place we want it to end up at the end, but that's what we had planned. I was just wondering where that stood.
Right now, I'm not sure. We'll get back to you. Justin, we'll get back to you. We'll hash that out. I know they're doing some work up there right now on the electrical. We will get back to you. Thank you, Ralph.
We're clear for now.
Okay. Moving along, so there's nobody else has any questions. Nope. All right. Next item on the agenda. Oh, did somebody raise a hand?
No.
David?
No. No hands.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said. Okay. So to appoint Justin L. Poria to the following positions: Road Commissioner, Treasurer, FOAA Administrator, and General Assistance Administrator. Do I have a motion to David?
I'd like to move to appoint Justin L. Poria to the following positions: Road Commissioner, Treasurer, FOAA Administrator, and General Assistance Administrator.
I second.
Is there any discussion on the part of the board? Mark?
You're on mute.
You're muted.
Sorry. I would just like to ask Justin if he's comfortable with all of these appointments to these positions.
Yes, as I said in my interview, I'll have a little bit to learn on the road commissioner, but if I can lean on some of you to point me in the right direction to start off, I'm comfortable trying to figure that out.
Thank you.
And I believe that tomorrow the town clerk or the assistant clerk will be swearing Justin in as the town administrator. Anyone in the public have a question or comment about this appointment? All right, seeing none, we'll do a roll call vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Damon is yes, unanimous. And now, not to put you on the spot, Justin, but do you have any, you know, thing you'd like to say, any report, any comments, anything that's come up that you'd like to share?
Do you want me to go through all my items I was going to do under other business now, or would you like me to do my town administrator report at this point?
You could do it's up to you, whichever way you want to do it. If you have some things you want to say now or some things later.
Sure, I can go through it now. First, I'd just like to thank everybody that I've met so far on the island. Everybody's been very helpful, especially Chris and Vika in the office. They've been very helpful at acclimating me, as was Marjorie when she was here earlier last week. So I just want to say thank you to that. The first thing that I wanted to mention was that I got a letter from Kim at Island Electric, and I'll just read this to you because they are giving basically a commendation to Chuck and Doug for their work with him down at the transfer station. So he says, their cooperation was paramount in a timely and professional installation of this critical system. Chuck received very short notice of the project, and he was able to procure the materials for the proper backfill in short order. During the actual excavation, unexpected conditions were met, and both men adapted and overcame all obstacles. While doing this job, they were also able to perform many of their regular duties. Their can-do attitude and equipment handling ability were noteworthy. It is through their efforts, the job was finished in a very narrow window of time without interruption of the normal operation of the transfer station. Both deserve a huge attaboy, and I would look forward to working with them if the occasion arises. Please make this letter a permanent part of their employee record. Respectfully submitted. So I just wanted to make sure the board was aware of that. It's always nice to hear nice things about the town staff, of course.
Yeah.
Always nice.
Next item I wanted to bring up was the board's thoughts about with the rising COVID cases again, about whether the town office should go to remote, not remote work, but whether the town office should be closed to the public again as it was before. I just wanted to bring that up and get your feedback. I talked a little bit to Dawn about this, and she thought getting input from the CART committee might be a good place to start. But before we go that route, I just wanted to get a general feel from all of you.
I did some research this afternoon, Justin. I called Long Island and North Haven, and they are both doing, they're coming to work, but it's not remote.
Right.
But they are closed to the public, and they're doing the Dropbox like we did before.
Okay.
So I felt that was important to find out what everybody else was doing, just so that if somebody said, well, what is everybody else doing, we would know the answer. And so I just, you know, the first two places I checked, both were doing this. So maybe, you know, we could say from now until the first of the year and then reevaluate at the first of the year. Does that sound like a reasonable? I don't know if we have to vote on that. I think that's really between you and the staff. What is the rest of the
board? Yeah, I'm happy to make that call as long as you're all comfortable with it.
How do people feel on the board? Mark?
I'm fine with it. I think it worked pretty well before, didn't it? Chris, didn't people call in and...
Yeah, actually, we didn't miss a beat. I mean, starting back in March, we were able to do everything by using that little mailbox out front. People totally seemed to understand, and I think they were more comfortable too, even the customers.
Yeah, I'm fine with it, Donna.
How about you, David? I'm just doing consensus.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's the way to go. I do think that if we get past the next 8 weeks or so, we might be in much better shape. But it's going to be a little bit tough during the winter, but that's the way it is.
What about you, Jay? How are you feeling about
this? I think the way that it's been working has been fine. There's lots of protection in there if somebody actually needed to come in. And otherwise, the Dropbox covers most of what needs to be done, or a lot of what needs to be done. So, you know, but I think that's up to Justin, Christine, and Vika, and, you know, the staff that works in there to make sure that they're comfortable.
Yeah. Thank you. Bo?
I'll support whatever the office decides.
Okay, thanks. Anybody in the audience have any input? Seeing none. Okay. What else do you have for us, Justin?
Did you want me to bring up the town floats now, or do you want that later?
We can do that later.
Okay. Then I think that's going to be about it for me at this point.
Thank you. All right. Anybody on the board have anything they want to ask Justin? He'll come back under communications and other business. So, all right, moving on. To hear an update regarding an aquaculture lease off Basket Island. Now, a minute ago, I saw Aaron Rue on here, and I don't see him anymore.
He's still here.
Oh, he's still here? Okay.
Yeah.
Aaron, would you like to come on because you were on the meeting as well as me. And Aaron is the chair of our Coastal Waters. And basically, the reason I put this on the agenda is just so it would be on our radar screen. For me personally, it was a little bit concerning because they're talking about, it's not a 4-acre, it's not a small one of these, it's 53 acres of a kelp farm. It's in the very early stages, but I just think that as a town, we need to keep, you know, really keep on this. So Aaron, is there anything you'd like to add?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
How's that? Okay. So, I'm happy to. I happened to look at the agenda yesterday and saw that this was an item. No one had really indicated to me that this would be on tonight's agenda. So, you know, at some point it might be helpful to get a heads up because I'm not always watching all of these things. But we have to be very careful, I think, at this point because we are being inundated with applications, and not just Chabig. You've got Yarmouth. You've got Harpswell, you've got our entire area just being bombarded because it's a pretty good deal for these folks. This particular one, Summit Point, is Pauline Frankie. She's extremely aggressive in her approach to working the sort of Cumberland, Falmouth, Forside Bay area, which of course is highly, highly congested. And she had originally proposed 100 acres that would have fallen between Basket and Clabbert Island, which is really where everyone, you know, boats and sails and uses as a transit point, as well as fishes. And she comes from a point where she feels as though she's entitled to about 1,000 acres, because that's really the cutoff limit for some of these things. And she's narrowed it down to this 53-acre parcel, which basically borders the Basket Island ledge that's out there. And, you know, from a navigation standpoint, that could be a nightmare. During the fishing season, which is November through May, we're looking at close to 3,000 buoys being out there. And as you've probably all seen, Stuart Hunt's lease out here, which is only 4 acres at the moment, but he's shooting for 12, that's a lot of gear. And in the summertime, there'd still be on order of, I forget what it was, but 300 to 500 buoys that are out there. So this is talking about putting something out there for 20 years that we will all have to work around. And it's something that can be sold to corporations. And so we have to be really, I think, careful about how we manage these leases. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot that we can do. And on the 10th, there is a meeting with DMR to learn a little bit more about what we can do with this. They've set up several meetings this month, and the CWC is going to be, a few of us are at least going to be on that. It's sort of reservation only. It's limited to 40 per session. And we'll know a little bit more about what kind of teeth a community may have, but I think we really have to start getting pushy about some of these leases coming in. She's been shut down in other areas, and during her scoping session, I got the distinct impression that Falmouth and Cumberland are both very wary of her approach to this fishing. So that's a little bit of an update, but this is one we really have to be careful of. But if we're not careful, we're going to be able to walk across the buoys from here to Cousins pretty soon. We won't need a bridge.
Thank you, Aaron. I apologize for not getting in touch with you. I thought about it about five times, and every time then I get distracted. But main reason for putting it on here was just to say we need to be on top of this. And so I was really pleased by the participation from people from Chibig. And it really, at some point, we're going to have to join some lobby to go to the state to get them to review some of these rules, because she did say that at the meeting. She said, I could have, when I said something about this is 50 acres was a lot, and she said, well, I could have 1,000 if I wanted to. I mean, it was the attitude.
She's repeated that over and over, and she made her original approach was to us, I think, in 2019 or 2018 even, and she was going for an extremely large parcel. She wanted to meet with us first, and when she found out it was a meeting on record, then she wouldn't come out.
Oh.
And so it's David?
Yeah. Well, actually, I was waiting for
Sorry, I just...
That's okay. I just want to confirm the space we're talking about is not within Chibig's territorial waters. Am I correct?
Oh, 95% of it is. Within,
It is?
It's just 95%. On the cusp. It's
95% in or out?
In.
Okay.
5% in Cumberland, and the other 95% on the town of Chibig waters.
Would it make any sense to express the sentiment of the board of directors, board of selectmen, in opposition to this this project?
I don't think we're at that point yet, are we, Aaron?
That's my question.
So we had until November 26th to write some comments, which I did do. I sent a letter in. Don, I think you were going to do something, and I think there may have been a couple others. The way this works now is through a process where there will be another site visit next spring, and then it'll have to go to public hearing, and that'll be similar to what we went through with Jason Papke's sunset provision. So right now, we won't gain anything by making a stink out of it, because all the comments that, like, for instance, I made were simply passed on by DMR to Colleen Frankie at Summit Point. And, you know, DMR, I think, is a little bit tied, because that's revenue for them when they have these applications. It's a fair amount of revenue. And if they don't get a lot of resistance, then they're kind of happy to have this work, because for them, that's more job security for people that are in these biologist positions, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where we need to be careful. And I'll be happy to give the board sort of a synopsis of my thoughts and findings on the, you know, the DMR meeting that we have scheduled on the 10th. But we can't really do anything else right now.
And while we're at it, what is the status of the application off of Sunset?
That got nixed. That got turned down by the commissioner.
Good to know.
So that actually did work. What I'd like to find out is there a little bit more, I guess, not orthodox, but a little bit more structured way in which we can approach these things. Because I can't tell you how many of these things are starting to show up all over the place. And that's 20 years that piece of property is taken up for someone who doesn't pay taxes and has use of that whole area.
Thank you, Aaron. And I promise next time I will email you. Even if it's the middle of the night.
You were lucky this time. That's fine. I'll see you. I might get up early, but.
And if I might, please, Aaron, give us sufficient forewarning when it's time for us to make a statement.
Will do. Absolutely. This is sort of the number one item.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is 21-123. Before, I guess I should have said, is there anybody else here who wants to say anything about aquaculture? I'm sorry. Anyone in the attendees? I don't see any hands up, so. But I don't see all the people at once.
23 people out there.
I know. Okay. So going on to 21-123, I think this is the time to put Aaron back in the attendees and bring Jim Butler into the participants. So this summer, Marjorie and I were contacted by someone who had a concern about the number of junk cars on Chebig and the possibility of oil and gas and things leaking from them. And so I had a telephone meeting, and my suggestion at the time was, this really isn't a Board of Selectmen issue, this is really a code enforcement issue. And because we have an ordinance about junk cars. And so I encouraged the citizen to contact Jim, who is the code enforcement officer. And so Jim then got back in touch with me and wanted to talk with the board about whether or not the board was on board with looking at junk cars. And before we start the conversation, I just want to say, and I'm only speaking for myself, but I really think that it isn't up to the Board of Selectmen to direct the code enforcement officer to enforce the codes. So that's just to start there. But Jim has laid out a very logical process, and I would like to turn it over to him and so that he can get a chance to explain his idea for dealing with some of these violations. And he sent me a list late this afternoon. I sent it to all of you, but I forwarded it, but I don't know if you got it in time to see it and print it off.
All right, good evening. Well, can you guys hear me? This is Jim.
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I just wanted to, with Marjorie leaving and Justin just coming on board, and I know the board members change, it seems every year we have a change in the board, and I just didn't want to fire off some letters, I guess, without having everybody in the loop and making sure you're aware of, what your code enforcement officer is doing. Certainly agree with Donna on, I have the authority to enforce quite an array of laws and rules and ordinances. But, I've been a part of a lot of communities where we send these letters out. And, when people receive a letter like this, it kind of makes them upset sometimes. So before the complaints started rolling in that people are getting picked on or, what's the code officer doing, I just wanted to let everybody on the board know and the town administrator, we're going to, the complaints have come in. We're going to handle it a logical way. We're going to work with the property owners to identify them, investigate what they have, and, work on voluntary compliance with them, and, work on some timeframes and, kind of go down the path of voluntary compliance. Because, we want to be sure if we're sending these letters out that, people are taking them serious and we're being fair and consistent across the board, with any properties that may or may not be in violation, and, work through that process. If we have properties that don't respond to the letter or respond to any correspondence with me, I can begin the legal process of enforcement. And, that's where typically I'd come back to the Board of Selectmen and the town administrator, just because we may have to spend monies on legal services. We may need to bring people to court. So, we don't want to do that. We want, I have a pretty good way of working with people and, putting together some good plans of correction. So, but again, just wanted to, update you folks on that and make sure that you're well aware of what's going on and, working with these people. Being on an island, it's a little bit of a, we're going to have a local read on the state statute for junkyards because, cars aren't required to be registered on the island, and the state statute talks about, once you hit three vehicles unregistered, you're in violation. So, I'm kind of thinking of taking a common sense approach on it. And, if people's cars run and move, we're probably not going to count those towards their three vehicles. But if they're cars that are really, being a junkyard and or they're just collecting junk which could have an adverse effect on the island and the environment, then that's when we'd kind of start the count. So I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. And, you know, I'm certainly, you know, working on getting these letters out this month. And then, you know, we're going to ask people to respond within 30 days. And then if I don't get response, I'll send a second letter. And then from there, if I have no responses, and, you know, then we'd begin, you know, probably the legal process. But before I took those steps, you know, just wanted to make sure you were all aware of that.
Thank you, Jim. That was very, very thorough. I want to correct one thing. Our cars do have to be registered here in Chabot. We don't need license plates, but they have to be registered. And they have to go to the town office. They have to show proof of insurance and all that. They don't have to be inspected because we don't have an inspection station. So just because a car runs doesn't mean that it's inspected, that it's registered. So I don't know if you knew that.
Yep, I misspoke. Thank you for the clarification on that.
Yeah, I just didn't want everybody out there who's, we have a lot of people on here to think they don't have to register their cars anymore. A lot of them don't want to do it anyway, but I mean, it is something we have to do. So I guess before we open this up, the only thing that I saw personally in this letter was working under the direction of the town administrator and the board of selectmen, you've been instructed. And I guess that's where, you know, for me personally, I don't think we have to do that. So I would suggest admitting it, but that's just me. I'm going to open it up to the board and then I'll open it up to the public and for comment. Anybody on the board have a comment, a question? Bo?
I mean, you can go to the town administrator, but to come to the board of selectmen, it's an island and it's very difficult to get stuff on and off this island. So it might have been what he meant by that, to just get some kind of clear path on which way to go with certain people on this island.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Mark.
I don't know if anyone else on the island besides Kim Bame has been helping to remove junk and junk cars. My question mostly is, I think that he has mainly been using the Chabig Transportation Company barge for his vehicle removal of junk. Is that accurate, Bo, in your opinion?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think it is, but I don't know if he has been using Lionel Plant or not.
That was my only point. If someone is asked or expected to remove something from their yard or off the island when the Chabig Transportation Company barge is not running, which is as of yesterday or the day before until the end of April, Is there a relationship that works with the other barge company that will help do that or not? I just don't know the answer.
I don't know.
I raised that issue with Jim in correspondence this week. And yeah. Jim, I don't want to speak for you, but basically I think you said you weren't going to push this too heavy when there's no barge available. Yeah.
Yep, you're absolutely right, Donna. And, you know, I think the timing is actually pretty good because, you know, we'll understand there's some logistical issues due to the time of year. But as long as we get a response from people and they have a plan, as soon as the barge start running, the boats start going, that they can get on that list and kind of put together a plan with their time frames. Because, you know, sometimes it's going to cost people money to do this as well. So we want to make sure that it's something that they can, I don't know, put a reasonable plan together and we'll have time frames. And, you know, we'll work with the individuals for the unique circumstances.
Thank you. Jay?
From what Jim has described, he's taking a rational, reasonable approach that will fit in the the issues of getting things moved around on this island. I think we ought to leave it in his hands. He seems to have a very good approach and a firm concept about how he wants to go about it. You know, and as long as people respond to him, it sounds like, you know, he wants to work with them and, you know, achieve the end result that we're looking for. So I think we ought to just leave it in his hands.
Great. Okay, anybody else before I go to the audience? I noticed, David, you've got three people elevated here. Is that for a reason?
Well, Matt Ridgway and Chris Loader would like to speak.
Okay.
Chris had his hand up first.
Okay, Chris.
Yep, thanks. Jim and the board, I emphatically support this work. This is super important for our environment and also for the general appearance of the island. And if there is, as part of the letter, you know, perhaps there is a plan program whereby, you know, if someone has two vehicles, there's a way to work with either the CTC or a mainland yard so that the value, the junk value of the vehicle can be used to compensate or to pay for, you know, the transportation off the island. It's just something, you know, you get a letter, by the way, all you have to do is say yes, and the value of your vehicle and the CTC and the junker on the other side, it's all going to get it paid for. You just need to, you know, release it out and get it off the island. So there may be some ways of making that work easily for people that do want to get their cars off the island. I'm sure you have a good plan already, but thank you for putting this together.
Thank you. Matt?
Yeah, so I looked at what Jim had put out in the board packet, and I think it looks like he's doing a really good job with his approach to this really important issue. CTC continuing to do what we've always done, which is allow any car that can be driven onto the barge and can stop and start. You know, we'll continue to take those cars off at no cost during our barging season. And you know, we'll continue to work with Kim like we've been doing for the past number of years to do everything we can to help get junk cars off. So if there's anything that we can do to help Jim, or if there's any way that we can be part of the conversation, just, you know, we're happy to take part in that.
Thank you, Matt. So I think Jim's probably heard that, and that will be put in his tool belt. Jim, is there anything else you need from us?
No, I don't think so, but I appreciate that information, Matt. I think I'm going to probably tweak my letter a little bit to reflect what you just said, because I actually wasn't aware of that. So I think it's a good idea to share as much information as I can possible so people know, you know, because a lot of people don't know how to get their junk off the island. So I can include that in the letter, and I appreciate your guys' support.
Thanks. Okay. So does everybody agree, though, that it probably shouldn't say we're directing him to do it? Does everybody, by consensus, do you all agree that he has the authority to do it?
I think it has to be made clear that he has that authority.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? All right. Moving along. The next item on the agenda is to hear a Maine Island broadband update from the Island Institute. Kendra Jo from the Island Institute reached out to me last week and offered to give an update on what was happening on the other islands. And so it seemed like this, at the time I thought we had hardly anything on the agenda. And I didn't know about all the surprises that would be coming in. But so I would like to now turn it over to Kendra Jo, and she's going to tell us what people have been doing up and down the coast. And also, I personally want to thank the Island Institute for all of the help that they have given this community in so many different ways over the last almost 35 years. So I'm just throwing that out there. I think she'll need to share a screen, David.
Okay, let's see. Okay, who am I trying to admit?
Kendra Jo Grindle.
Where is she?
She's in the list.
Oh, she's way at the bottom. Okay, believe it or not. Sorry. We'll bring you in here. And here's Kendra Jo. And there you are.
Hello. Can everyone hear me?
Okay, I'm going to make you a co-host, so you should have screen privileges. And there you are. And
maybe okay. Kendra Jo, to just tell people a little bit about what you do at the Institute.
She needs to unmute.
Yeah, of course. Sorry, just going to get this going. Is everyone seeing my screen,
yeah,
by the way? Yes, perfect. So my name is Kendra Jo Grindle. I'm a Senior Community Development Officer at the Island Institute. I oversee our community infrastructure teams, so both our broadband team, and I'm the strategic lead for our Sea Level Rise team as well. I've been with the Institute in this capacity for about 2 years. Some of you might have met my predecessor, Stephanie McLagan, who has moved on to the Connect Maine Authority. I worked with her in the last 2 years and recently transitioned into that lead position for broadband as well. I've been working kind of with the Chibi community on broadband since I started. I've worked with the previous committee and supported some of the community meetings that occurred in the past, as well as just keeping an eye on what's been happening with your incumbent providers and understanding ways that buildouts have happened. Smaller projects along the island have expanded internet connectivity, and yeah, just as we do with all of our islands and coastal communities, just keeping a good understanding of what your connectivity is and opportunity. That way, when opportunities do come up, we can engage and make sure that you're aware of them, regardless of any action that's taken. So what I wanted to do is just take a little bit of your time to share an update and then talk a little bit about some opportunities and then just answer some questions. I have a couple of questions of you all as well, if you don't mind me asking, and we can go from there. But I'll go ahead and get started. So Island Broadband, as it stands right now, it's changed a little bit over the last couple of years. Some of you might know Islesboro is fully built out, as well as Cranberry Isles, Cliff Island, and then Matinicus has, with their incumbent, a baseline of broadband speeds, not on a DSL connection. So Islesboro's model is working through the town and the tax base to do a municipally owned build. Cranberry Island Isles is similar with a municipally owned build. Cliff Island took the approach of an LLC model. So with private investors, was able to come together and cover the cost of building out to their community. That was after an understanding of the role that Portland could or could not play in any of their connectivity issues and finding mostly a financial model that would work best for their community. We're looking to see build outs in 2021 of at least Monhegan and potentially Long Island. Monhegan has received a USDA Reconnect grant and is working with Axiom as a provider to build out. We're hoping to break ground in the spring once everything goes through on the USDA side. And Long Island is working with Consolidated Communications on a private-public partnership in which there's a breakdown between of ownership. It's a shared ownership model between who owns backhaul and who owns those last mile home drops. Long Island will be the first community that Consolidated is working on a full fiber to the home build. They have done that in New Hampshire a handful of times, and Long Island will be the first. Consolidated is the only provider on Long Island, so it's a good fit for them taking that step in Maine. And then planning-wise, we have Vinyl Haven has been working for a little bit now planning. They've gone through kind of the first phase of community engagement and surveying. They now are getting their feasibility study completed, reporting out to the community, and engaging around various options that they have put forward to the community through both a phased approach to build out and a community-wide owned build out. They are potentially going to seek state funding in the upcoming infrastructure rounds. Great Diamond, Little Diamond, and Peaks are working with the city of Portland to build upon the Tilson report that they had that was done in 2015 to understand some of the connectivity issues that they continue to face. Peaks does have spectrum, if not entirely island-wide, majority island-wide, but from what I understand, they're having, similar to kind of what's happening on Chibig, they've reached capacity on their number of drops for their community and for their residents. So it's hard to connect any new homes or make new connections on the infrastructure that's currently in place. Great Diamond, also the association there, has been speaking with Consolidated to understand what they could potentially do as their own community as well. But the city of Portland did submit for a phase one planning grant to the Connect Maine Authority in the most recent Connect Maine Authority grant application round. And coastwide, we see communities kind of more in the mid-coast area and north, building out community infrastructure and or partnering with their incumbent providers to do so. Bremen is a good example of a community that has worked with their incumbent provider, their telephone provider, Tidewater Telecom, or also known as LCI, to build out. They received Connect Maine infrastructure funds in the last round earlier this year and should be breaking ground in 2021. Up in the down east section, Broke Bluffs, also similar to Monhegan, received Reconnect funding to be able to build out their infrastructure and will be doing so next year as well. Some upcoming opportunities that I just want to make sure that all of our communities are aware of is that there are state funding opportunities because of the $15 million bond that was passed. The Connect Maine Authority has held one of two public input sessions on how those bond funds will be spent. The first session in November was around some objective setting and understanding what they were aiming to see included in these infrastructure grant applications, how to prioritize grant applications. And the second second session will be on December 14th at 1:00. It's open to anyone in the public who'd like to engage. And it'll be around their scoring and criteria. So we're hoping that with those set in stone, we will see the first of what will be at least two, but potentially three, infrastructure rounds in 2021. The reason they're having more than one is just because of the amount of money. It's quite a substantial amount more than they typically have as an authority. But also understanding that as more municipalities seek these funds, it hasn't always aligned with the town meeting process. Some towns meet in the early months, January, February, and March. Others do not meet until the summer, June, July. So understanding that an infrastructure grant round should and or could and should, be aligned with your town meeting as well. So the first one we're hoping to see in the January, February timeframe, and at least a second, if not a third, further along in May and June. We welcome anyone to provide public input by either attending the meeting, or there's also a survey and a written comment period following the meeting to understand what is going on, how it impacts your community, and how to best approach these infrastructure rounds so that you're competitive. We feel that many of our islands, you know, if not the whole island, at least parts of the island, do have competitive areas that remain not just underserved, but entirely unserved, and that there are opportunities for communities and the incumbent provider to seek state funding to cover those unserved areas. That's potentially what we will see on Chibig, with an incumbent provider potentially seeking state funding to cover an completely unserved area of your community.
Can you, Kendra Jo, can you explain what incumbent...
Oh, sorry. Yes. An incumbent provider is a provider that already exists in your community. So you have consolidated an axiom as incumbent providers in your community.
And so what you're saying is they could apply for a grant to do a section if they wanted to.
Yes.
Completely not
to offset their cost.
The community at all. I mean, to the town at all.
Yes, they can, to support their own business model. We will see how successful standalone provider applications are, typically having some community buy-in or at least conversation and commitment, whether it's financial or just in subscribers, is welcomed and supported. We'll see in their guidance how heavily they weight that relationship. But there have been times where providers have solely sought infrastructure grant funding to offset the profitability or return on investment for building out further in an area that they might not be able to otherwise. And that's mostly what we see in completely unserved areas where the premise density doesn't allow for their business model to make sense building out on their own. The Maine Broadband Coalition launched a speed test in November. We, as an organization and leader in broadband, helped support this along with the Maine West Initiative and Connect Maine Authority. And we welcome anyone and everyone to go to the Maine Broadband Coalition's website and take the speed test. It's helpful not just to understand what the connectivity looks like in your community, but it'll also help feed data into these grant infrastructure rounds to better support and identify where infrastructure projects can and should take place. So,
Donna, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'd like you to explain the difference between unserved and underserved and what those speed definitions are for those two categories.
Sure. So the speed definition is 25.3. It's set with the FCC. The state follows the same guidance as the FCC for broadband being 25 megabits per second download and 3 megabits per second upload. Unserved is not having the access to that service down and under 10.1. Sorry. Underserved is a percentage within a census block. It's an 80% of the census block has service, then it's considered served.
Yeah, and
an archaic approach to unserved. But it is what
everybody in the audience who's listening, I believe the Island Institute is conducting a speed survey, if you will, to document exactly what our speeds are, most of which are indeed in the under 10 range and certainly under 25. So Kendra, if you could talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, so that is what this Maine Broadband Coalition speed test is. They're leading it. We are supporting it both as a partner in the creation, but also financially. And I could probably share what it looks like, if that's okay. Can you see that change to a speed test?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. You go to the Maine Broadband Coalition's website and you'll see this. And you just click run your speed test. And you get a selection of options to put your address in. You can put your entire address in, a partial address, or if you don't have service at all, you can mark that you are premise without service, and then it'll still ask you for your address and put a black dot on our map. It's a way to, you know, use whatever device you have, or if you have to go to a library or some other place to gain access, that we can still acknowledge that there are homes or businesses in Maine that have zero service at all and are unable to run the speed test. I will show you one other thing. This is the speed test map results. You can't see that.
Can you zoom in on Shebig?
Yeah. Yeah, so we've got Shebig Island here.
There we are.
And we have a few results that have been taken. Not entirely sure what your sense
is. That's me right there.
Yeah, so we've got some people all the way up island that are having a measure of six down and not quite one up.
That's me.
And then, yeah. And just in, we see a 20, almost two. And over here, you can kind of see some of the results for, this is for Cumberland County as a whole. It's not just for Shebig. So that just gives you an idea. And as communities start to take more and more tests, it'll help us to identify where some of those pockets are. We know that speed tests are not an exact science, but they do give us what a user's experience is. So we do encourage people to take the speed test more than once and not at the exact same time each time, so that we can get a better understanding of what that experience is. It also is going to be really helpful for showcasing the various types of issues we see in Maine. Some places it is that entire sections of communities don't have service or have been completely left behind, maybe have satellite instead of a telecom or cable provider. But we also will be able to see some last mile issues. So if I back out of here and go up to the St. George community, one thing that we see along the coast, especially the peninsula, is that fiber runs entirely down the peninsula on 131. And along the outside, kind of these last mile long roads, is where we see the issues of connectivity. So if you are living right along 131, you feel like there is no community, there's no issue of access to service. But if you live right along the coastline on some longer roads where you don't have the same neighbor kind of premise density or number of neighbors per mile that a provider is looking for, it can be really difficult, if not impossible, to get and affordable access to internet. So we're starting to see some of that pop up too. Whereas in the past, we weren't necessarily seeing the state acknowledge last mile issues or how extensive last mile issues are in the state of Maine.
Could you zoom in on Long Island? Because it looks to me like they have, a lot more people have done it on Long Island. In fact, I thought I did it, but my house doesn't show up here, so I must have done a different speed test.
Yeah, so we've got Long Island down here.
So how do you explain that some people have red and the neighbor has green?
So what I would, so they just have green. Some of this, what we'll see is, honestly, that person, I would ask them what they had running at the time of their speed test. What we're also starting to see is all of your neighbors have green and you have a red dot in the middle. It might be your internal infrastructure, or you didn't follow the kind of process that we outline on the NBC website, and maybe you took it during a Zoom test, or there are lots of people in your house streaming Netflix at the same time. We do try to ask that people close, you know, don't be like me and have 30 browser tabs open while someone in another room is watching Netflix at the same time. So try to create an environment in which we can get a more accurate speed test.
Would you mind showing the islands that just got upgraded or I can't remember the names of the islands that had it.
Yeah.
Like the Cranberries or Ellsboro.
Yeah, right. We'll see if there's been any speed tests. We just kicked this off in November. So let's see here. Let's see if there's anyone on Cranberries that's taken. I don't see any green dots there. I'm gonna have to get on Cranberries to take my speed test. But let's hop to Islesboro. Yeah, so there's Islesboro. We've got some speed dots.
Wow, they're almost all green or aqua. Wow.
Yeah, so we've got, so they have a gigabit symmetrical. They don't have a tiered service. What they have gone with is a gigabit symmetrical available to each home. It's a shared system, but that's the only tier. You can't get 25.3 or
so. They all get the same thing, as opposed to like where we might be have three different levels and you pay three different prices. So they all pay the same thing on us.
Yes. Yep. As a municipally owned infrastructure, that's, you know, something that's possible for them to set up with their provider, that they felt affordable was, it was one of their priorities, have a gigabit symmetrical service available to all residents at an affordable rate. So they were able to take offset of cost and not only the subscription rate, but also back to the tax base.
We have a question. Is this map available to the general public? What link would we use to get
to? Yeah, I can share the link. But also, if you go on the Main Broadband website, you can click View Current Results, and it'll take you right to the link as well. So,
thank you.
I don't know if I can. I will share it in the chat once I back out of this. But it's right there available on the website, and it should show you once you take the test an opportunity to go and visit the map as well to see your result. But that's kind of where we stand right now. We have total tests is 4,900 across the entire state. We're hoping for much more, and can kind of see how many tests we need in some of these areas for a verified sample. Back down here at the bottom, it'll kind of get into that. But yeah. I wouldn't take your speed test right now because you're on Zoom, but maybe later. So I'm just gonna back out of this and go back to my presentation. Bear with me for just a moment. All right. So this is the last thing that I wanted to share with the select board was, you know, we did facilitate a couple of provider meetings, just update meetings, that I believe I included all of the select board on those invitations, and there are recordings. They've now shifted to YouTube, to our YouTube platform for viewing. So if you have the link, which I can also share in the chat with everyone, you can go and view them, but they were with your incumbents, so Consolidated and Axiom, and they were able to kind of give an update and presentation on how they work with communities, what their model looks like, and what they could potentially do with the island of Chabig. We do know that there is at least one constraint with Consolidated currently, where there is no more, as I mentioned earlier, the infrastructure won't allow for more residential connections. So I do believe there have been some new connections on Chabig that have had to be at a business level connection instead of a residential level connection. But by watching that video, I do believe that Jeff gets into that a little bit and talks through it. So, and if anyone needs the slides that are, I do believe I sent them in a follow-up, but if you're interested in the slides, you can see them on video, but I can also send them separately to the board. So that was kind of it for my update. That's where we stand. Things are definitely continuing to rapidly change, especially with the infusion of more state dollars. because we've seen that community engagement, buy-in, and state funding has been very beneficial to getting to breaking down some of the barriers that have happened over time with private investment in premise dense areas. But unfortunately for rural Maine, we don't want 25 neighbors in 1 mile. We want our space, and we like rural, and that can lead to the inability to make connections to adequate internet access. So we're going to see a lot more momentum come up and more opportunities come up in the next year or two. And we're hoping for more state funding in the future. So I just wanted to take an opportunity to give you an update, but also let you know of what's happening at the state level and opportunities that the community might have. So I'm gonna stop sharing my screen, if that's okay, and allow the select board to ask any questions that you might have.
Well, Kendra Jo, I spoke with you about this on the phone, because I wasn't sure whether we should actually even go forward with this, but I'm glad we did, because it's really interesting to see what everybody else is doing. Because we had a proposal a year ago for a specific broadband plan that 66% of the people on Chibig voted against. And so my concern about bringing, talking about it again was, people say, well, we've already said we don't want to do this. And so I guess the more I thought about it after you called was, we really need to find out where people are, where their heads are now after Zoom. Every single member of this board of selectmen has been kicked off at some point during a meeting. We have kids who are working remotely from home and that kind of thing. And so I really think that maybe I'm just throwing out my own personal idea, that one of the first things we need to do is find out if the town of Chibig even wants us to research various broadband options and possible funding sources, because we don't want to have set some people up to spend 2 or 3 years of doing a lot of work when nobody even has an interest in the first place. So one of the things I'm going to just throw out right now to this board, but not to talk about tonight, we can actually have it as a future agenda item, is having a non-binding referendum at our, we're having a referendum town meeting on another topic. Just to say something as simple as what I just said, do you want, should the town of Chibig research various broadband options and potential funding sources? Should they even look at it? And we could also do Survey Monkey too and find out, are people interested in getting more information? Because that's really, I think, where we are right now, because we're back to the drawing board. And as I said, it was one specific proposal. But if people are in the, it's good enough right now, I don't care, as long as I don't get kicked off 3 times during a meeting, I'm happy. Or did you just get kicked off, Mark?
He's back.
I'm back now.
Okay. But anyway, so we're not trying to influence anybody. And before we open this up to the public, we're just trying to provide some information and think about, having a future agenda item where we really talk about, do we want to do a poll of the community to see if they want to have people look into this further. So that's just, I'm going to start there, David, and we'll talk to the board and then open it up to the public.
Yeah, I just, excuse me. I just wanted to say to Kendra to express our appreciation on behalf of the Historical Society. We're about ready to get hooked up within a couple of weeks. We will have broadband, and at least Donna won't get kicked off when we have our meetings on Zoom.
That's where I am now, because I can't do it at my house.
It's even going to get better. So, but no, I just did want to express our appreciation to the Island Institute and to Kendra for making that happen. And we move slowly, but we move.
Yes, and the Island Institute gave the Historical Society a grant, which helped to that, along with recompense and a partnership with CTC, enabled us to actually do that. So there are some unique ways out there to make it happen. Anyone else have a comment before I open up to the public? Anyone on the board?
Yes.
or Justin, feel free to ask questions too. Jay.
I'm just.
My internet connection is unstable. I just want you to.
That's there's nothing new in that for any.
And he froze.
Oh, your internet. You froze.
My question is where does Long Island stand with consolidated? From what I read about that model, it was one that personally made a lot of sense to me. But it seems stalled for some reason. Is that something that's going to be going forward possibly, or is that going to be stalled?
It is going to go forward. I believe what they're waiting on is consolidated, and if not, also the town is looking to seek state funding to offset some of the cost. The model that was put forward, at least from the provider side, did include what they hoped was a portion of their cost being covered by state infrastructure dollars. So that's at least paused until there's an infrastructure round and potential award. It's not to say that if they don't get the award that it won't go forward, but I do believe the provider and the town are looking to potentially, see what their option is, and if they can get some of it offset by state dollars, then they would like to. But they have signed agreements. The town has voted, at least on their portion, up to a do not exceed amount.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just to let you know, Shabig voted 66% not to do it. Long Island voted 99% to do it. I think they had one person who voted no.
But they were two very different plans, Don.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying, is there are a lot of different choices out there. Yes.
I'm just wondering, do you know any of the dollar amounts that were associated with Long? Just, I'm not looking for an exact by cent. I'm just looking to compare with what we had to work with and what they're working with.
Yeah, it's smaller. Their do not exceed amount, I believe, is $550,000. The provider amount is around $160,000, $170,000. I could be off a little bit, but those are also, I believe, on the consolidated presentation. So it's a smaller community. Consolidated is the only provider, so they already have some infrastructure out there, and the line out going out to the island as well. So the costs are quite different than the larger island of Shabik.
The other thing is on Long Island, they agreed to pay up to $99 a month would be their fee.
The subscriber is technically paying back the bond, the municipal bond.
So that's how they were paying it back, was through the subscriber versus if they pay it into the town, and then that's how they pay it back. But it was so approximately $100 a month was how they figured to do it. David.
Yeah, I have a question coming online from Erica Newman. Can Kendra Jo comment on whether any other communities had a similar path of community resistance? For example, our 66% vote against broadband, and have any had success to ultimately coming around to improve broadband? I guess the last part, has anybody turned that 66% around to 66% in favor, let's say?
That is a really good question. And off the top of my head, and I could be wrong, but I'm going to say no. Typically, what we have seen is that the community engagement information and process prior to a town vote has led to a favorable town vote. Even in communities that don't have a history of taking on debt in the $1 million range, such as the town of Brook Bluffs, had never taken on a level of debt of that amount, but due to the community engagement process and buy-in prior to the town vote, it was successful. There will always be a percentage of the community that it does not vote in favor, but they've all passed, in at least in the ones that I can think of off the top of my head. I would say there has definitely been resistance that has taken, that has made the process go quite a bit longer than we've seen in the past. So Islesboro took 7 years. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say like it could happen in a year. Some communities, yes, with strong community buy-in, engagement, a select board that is strongly moving forward a process, good partnerships with whether it's an incumbent provider or a non-incumbent provider. So if you were to bring in someone who currently does not serve the community at all, we have seen those move from planning to at least getting all of the financials in order to break ground when that's possible in the in Maine winter and summer. But we have seen communities stall or create a longer process due to just not having full consensus or not feeling like there is that to go to a town meeting.
I have one more communication from Lila Bisharat. Thank you, Kendra, for the very informative presentation. Please share your slides so that the town can see they are posted for the whole community. And if you forward those slides to Bev Johnson, she can put them up for everyone to see. That'd be great. Thank you.
I will do that. I'll build them out a little bit more so that what I said is also available.
One of the things that I wanted to say is I was went through being on the Maine Island Coalition and the Board of the Island Institute. I went to several meetings with Islesboro in different places, and all of them had numerous champions throughout the various user groups or groups on the island. And I think that's, they did a good job with really door-to-door helping people understand what it was they were doing. Mark, and then we're going to go to the audience.
Thank you, Donna. First of all, thank you, Kendra, Joe, for your presentation. It was very, very helpful and informative. And to the Island Institute for all of their help, like Donna said, to all of us over the years. I think it would be valuable to try to get the pulse or sense of this community to take another look at broadband and the possibilities, not just should the town install and own the infrastructure, not just should it be private, what are the possibilities, what are the opportunities out there, and is it something that will benefit this community now and moving forward for ultimately sustaining the mixture of people that want to live in a community, island community like Chabig, and I just think it's probably worth another good glance. Thank you.
Anyone else on the board before I go to the audience? Okay, anyone in the attendees? Just raise your hand and you can become elevated. You have any questions or comments or?
Michael Porter's got his hand up.
Okay.
Michael. Yeah, I'd like to endorse what Mark said, that I think what was presented at the town meeting was a take it or leave it deal, which I guess is the way it has to be. But if we did some well-publicized work first to get buy-in and to also let people understand what the alternatives are, I think it might come out different.
Thank you, Michael. Anyone else out there?
No takers.
Okay, seeing none. Thank you so much, Kendra Jo. I'm glad that you reached out to us, and thank you. And one of the things Kendra Jo said to me, she said, we really don't want to leave any island behind, and which I thought that was really nice to because we didn't go knocking on your door, you knocked on ours just to say, this is what other people are doing. It's just possibilities. It's not, pouring something down our throat saying you've got to do this, you've got to do that. So thank you very much for the very nice presentation.
And thank you for having me. And I would just encourage everyone on to take the speed test and encourage others to do so as well. It might also help the select board understand just how user connectivity is on the, in the community as well. Just another piece of data for you. And let me know how I can help as you move forward to any community surveying or understanding your next steps.
Thank you so much. We'll let you know when we have it as on an agenda.
Sounds good. I'll be available.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. So now we're moving on to communications. I'm going to go back to Justin. I think there was a letter that came about floats.
Yes. So I received a letter from Jonathan Kamlausi, and he was asking, I'm sorry if I mispronounced his last name, and he was asking about keeping various floats in longer due to COVID concerns. I'm not sure if you want me to say much more than that at this point, Donna, or you want to leave it to you guys to discuss. Mark asked me to, he mentioned a policy, which I found, which I think this is probably gets to the question that needs to be asked. There's a Stone Wharf seasonal float system policy that was put in place by the Board of Selectmen in 2010. And the relevant portion says that the Harbor Master and Public Works Department shall remove seasonal floats from the water approximately December 1st of each year. If weather forecast and inclement weather warrant removal earlier, it shall be done only after 5 days notice. So that's the relevant part of the policy. The rest of it is about when they go in and things like that. So from there, I guess I'll leave this to you to discuss. I do know that the Public Works Department has some serious concerns about damage that might happen to floats if they're left in due to ice, waves, and all the other things that happen in the winter.
I think the real key here in the policy is the word seasonal floats. And I don't think there's any question that the that seasonal floats include the ones by the wave break. And then the other floats that we have, the commercial float, is really isn't a seasonal float. The CTC float isn't a seasonal float. And I don't know, have we ever hauled the one up in the creeks that's up in the cove? Does anybody know, Mark?
No, we've never really hauled that one, Donna. And if you all remember, that deteriorated badly a couple of years ago, and the Chebig Island Boatyard was very helpful in helping us replace that. So that kind of sits up in there and sort of just weathers the winter.
And the other floats were the punt floats, which I think they changed it so it's not just punts anymore. And those stayed in most years until recently. And so that's really, I think the only issue would be those particular floats. Do we keep those two in or do we take them out? David had his hand up and then.
Yeah, I just had a question, whether any of us have heard any requests, rumblings from other users of the Stone Wharf that we need to keep those floats in for a longer period of time. And what I'm going to suggest is, I really would like to hear from the other users, and if we kind of go public with this as a as an alternative under consideration, please let us know, and we'll think about it later. But right now, I'm not ready to move on it.
Well, theoretically, those at least the seasonal ones on the end, which always come out,
right,
are supposed to come out yesterday, today, or tomorrow. I mean, whenever the weather's okay. So it's really the question about what do we do with the those other floats that are, you know, those two on the side. Justin.
I just wanted to point out, like you said, the plan is for tomorrow for Gennaro and the Public Works Department to start removing the floats tomorrow. So there would need to be some direction unless you're going to ask them to put them back in after they remove them.
Got all sorts of hands up.
Okay, Bo.
It was also a few years ago, I remember, when that the one in the cove got beaten up and we had to fix, we had made a decision to leave some of the floats out, and there was some significant damage to some of them. And I think we ended up buying a new one and then having the boatyard fix some, if I remember correctly, because, you know, one, we left them out an extra 2 weeks, and they were beat up. We ended up having a really bad storm, and they were beaten up, and yeah.
I think what we're talking about probably is, the like you said, the one in the cove, which is fairly new, was rebuilt, was built new by the boat yacht, and the ones by the, you know, where that, those, the ladder goes up. Mm-hmm. Mark?
Just quickly, I won't take too long. So the two floats that are inside of the Islander that you were talking about, Donna, they are anchored to metal pilings, and three of them are really just well casing material that was put there by the town of Shebig quite a few years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago. Seven years ago, I believe now. And two or three of them are almost rusted completely off at the base where it meets the mud. So, you know, it may not be a great move to keep testing that. I think we're going to have to replace those with either newer metal ones sometime next year or wooden ones, whatever we can try to afford and schedule for repairs. So as much as I would like to say it's probably a good idea to try to leave some more floats off other than the commercial float, which pretty much stays in and by the Islander, and of course the one that the CTC boat, the Independent, and the one that berths to, and the one in the cove. But I just don't know if it's a great decision. And the reason we made this policy was just trying to balance out serving the community with their tie-up fees, giving them something to use until at least the first week of December, and trying to protect our equipment and investment and not having to, you know, repair and buy new floats too often, I guess. Thank you.
Anyone else on the board before I go to the people here? Okay, let's see. All right, let's start with Ralph. He's at the top of my list here.
Yep, go ahead. Well, wait a minute.
You put up Loader. That's not Ralph.
Ralph's still here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi. This is Ralph. I was kidding.
No. I know. I know you're.
I know you do. Go ahead with Ralph.
Put Ralph in.
Okay. Hang on a second. He's standing here now. All right. I think you should be good now, Ralph.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yep.
Yes.
So I would go with John on this one and request a couple of floats in, the seasonal floats that you were talking about. Due to the whole COVID issues that we've been having, I think CTC is going to have a hard time when all the floats come out and everybody starts riding the boat. I don't, with their current restrictions on the amount of people, I think it's going to be potentially an issue for people getting to work, myself included. The weather forecast for the foreseeable future is no cold weather, so I don't see any ice issues. And we have left two floats in the past on various years with really very little problems. It's quite easily for the public works to haul two floats out if we see the weather's getting bad and getting cold and we're worrying about ice. The float up in the cove was rebuilt by the boat yard, and what it replaced was kind of a junk float to begin with that the town put up in there, and it slowly deteriorated over years. So it wasn't due to leaving it in too late or anything. It had never come out, like Mark had said. So I hope that doesn't influence you at all. But it would be a huge help to me if there was a couple floats left in.
Okay, Chris?
Go ahead, Chris.
Yep. Yeah, so thank you. I would, as someone that uses the floats, I will tell you I don't plan to use them in the middle of January, but certainly while the temperatures are still a little warmer and there is no ice, would absolutely use the float right up until the 21st.
And which float are you talking about?
I use a seasonal floats at the end, a portion of the time. Primarily, I use the smaller two floats on those well piping, well linings that Mark referred to.
Okay.
The only issue would be is if all of the, you know, the docks, the seasonal docks at the end of Stone Wharf were removed, we'd go from, you know, three or four boats there, you know, with the well piping to, you know, a much larger volume. That would be the only concern.
Thank you. Michael Porter?
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Okay. I probably wrote that policy, but the board passed it. And one of the main reasons was that we at that time didn't think that we had to be in the business of supplying year-round floats at the Stone Wharf, that there was kind of a balance between the people's desire to go back and forth in outboards and the cost and complications to the town of dealing with the floats at in the winter. And I still, I guess, more or less think that. In those days, a lot more people had their boats on all off went off the beach, but that's all different. So I don't see a lot of reason to change the policy. I think that it's good to get them out while the weather is good. They'll last a lot longer. And I would be interested to know, I guess Jonathan wrote that letter, if he had reasons why the COVID pandemic should change that policy. I guess that's a question.
We have somebody identified only as M who would like to speak.
Okay, can anybody answer? Justin, do you have the letter with you by any chance from John Camolosi? What does he say other than more people are going on the boat because of
He COVID. Talks about the increases in the COVID issues, and he says cases increasing. It makes sense to continue small boat access to alleviate CTC ferry crowding and our wait times during the winter months. Regardless of winter weather, punt outboard access is a safe means of transportation to and from the island, especially during the COVID pandemic. And I think that's pretty much his reasons for it. And then he just goes on to explain which floats he wants to keep in.
Okay. Before we go to M, I just want to say, I think from my experience, from the time we put in all those floats up to the wharf, when we were still part of Cumberland and I was on the Cumberland Town Council, this has come up every single fall. People don't want the floats taken up when we have to take them up. And that's why I think this ordinance was written, because it was like a crapshoot over, you know, when you take it up. And I'm trying to think back, and when Michael was talking, it made me remember. And I think that it was so that there'd be some consistency, people could plan ahead. I think that, so in case people want a context, I think that's what it was. But every year we have people who say, please don't take them out. So, okay. So would Mysterious M please identify?
Hi, Donna. It's Nathan Doty.
Hi, Nathan. So the right. M was a trick.
I think it was Martha.
Oh, okay. I get it.
No, I just wanted to say I hope they at least leave the one in the cove, because I have not ridden the Independence since last January or February, and I don't go to town extremely often, but I'm still going to go in my own boat because I think the Independence is going to get overcrowded soon because there's still an awful lot of boats off that are going to have no place to tie up tomorrow. And I want to ask that somebody in the town, is it okay if I put a haul off somewhere, if I want to use my boat and come home and it's low tide and I can't tie it up somewhere?
Well, that's a good question. I think that historically most people have put haul offs wherever they wanted them to go. And unless you're in somebody's way and they cut it out because you're in their way, I think that's been kind of the culture. But I can't officially say that because I don't own the property there. You can put one in down in front of my house. I do own the property there. I don't think it's going to help you. But I think we're talking about keeping that one in the cove. Even. I think that's kind of been determined. I think it's more a question of, do we leave those in where the where you walk down the metal rail ladder? Mark, you had your hand up.
Well, I think I noticed last year, maybe the year before that, I think Alex Todd and his son rigged up a haul off right off of the ladder near the floats that are in front of the Islander. So I would encourage Nathan or anybody else, if they have an idea of how to make something work if a float is not available, to just talk to Gennaro, the harbor master, and I'm sure it's fine.
Okay, we have three hands up. Well, two now. Michael and Ralph.
Okay, Michael.
I think he raised his hand again.
He did have it. It is
raised. Yeah, I guess I did, but it's more or less moot now. I'm agreeing with what Mark said, and I wanted to chuckle at what Donna said.
Oh, I can't remember what it was.
That's okay.
Oh, about, well. Okay, yeah. Okay, Ralph.
Whoops, sorry. What happened to Ralph? Okay, there he is.
Lower hand, right, go away. Sorry about okay. that. I had no intention of talking again. It just, it seemed to think I still had my hand.
Always good to hear from you.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so as to Michael's comment, this is more than a desire. I have to get to work. It's pretty imperative, a time frame. I can't be delayed by a half an hour or an hour. I run into some real issues if that happens. And I really do think that the CTC is going to run into issues as far as transporting everybody. We've changed a lot of things in this town, in this country, over the last 9 or 10 months due to the COVID. And I don't think this is too much to ask to leave two floats in for an extended period of time. I know the policy, I know the reason behind it. And I think there's some reason behind it to leave a couple of floats in. It's all about the people of Chabig. Maybe we could make it more about the people of Chabig and leave two floats in where they're seasonal and only allow people from Chabig to tie up to them instead of people from off island. I think that would alleviate a lot of the problem, and I think that would be something that would be fair and extremely helpful to the people of Chabig.
Thank you, Ralph. Chris Loda has his hand up.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Chris. Yeah, sorry, I was stuck muted there. I concur with Ralph and Nathan. I think a good compromise, if you will, is to keep those two floats in as long as reasonable. It allows for safe transit for people who choose not to take the Independence. It is a place that is safe from the standpoint of the bulk of the wind, and haulouts, while legal, with permission from Gennaro, are actually less safe than having those two, docks in there that were right along the stone wharf. So I hope that you will see that that's a good compromise. Thanks.
Okay, M is We're back with Nathan. Now I know it's Nathan. Okay.
Oops. Here we go.
There we go. You can talk now, Nathan. Thank you.
To add on to Ralph and Chris, those two floats ahead of the Independence historically stayed off year-round no matter what, up until a couple of years ago they started taking them up. But I think this year, where there's no boats after 6:15 from CTC, is everybody going to tie up at that commercial float in front of CTC? Because that's going to create a problem for them. And I also think there is an ordinance, you cannot put a haul off the Stone Pier, because the town of Chabig put that in when they put the breakwater and the float system in. So I'm not sure Gennaro is going to let a bunch of people put haul offs off everywhere, but maybe he will. But I think this is a unique circumstance this year, and I think people are still going to want to use their boats for at least as long as the weather is good.
Thank you, Nathan. Bo, I see you waving.
I think if we leave the two floats in, that's a good idea. Just what Nathan just said, I think if we leave the commercial float in, there's an emergency and the Independence has to go out. Then they dodge little boats too. I think we need to leave the one in the cove, two extra floats, the commercial float in with the one that the CTC berths in. The one that's on the metal post needs to come out, because that one, I don't know if it'll support the winter, at least until we get ice. Once we start getting some ice in the cove, it's going to be very difficult to get that out. And even at that point, I'm not afraid to go to the community and justify why we got to spend.
You became muted.
You muted yourself.
Sorry about that.
You're so excited, Bob. You finally get called on. Yes.
I said, I don't know where I left off, but I don't mind going to the community and justifying, a few thousand dollars because some got damaged because we left them in because of this unique situation. We're not only looking for the people that are taking their outboards safety, but we're also looking at the people that are taking the CTC boats safety. By minimizing the amount of people that are taking the boat.
Mark?
Was that a motion?
Yeah, let's make it a motion. Why not?
Okay. I'll go ahead and second it.
All right, so I'm summarizing the motion. The motion is we're taking out what has historically been the seasonal floats, which is consistent with the policy, which are the ones that are inside the wave break.
Except so, for two.
I thought you're talking about the two that were over by the...
We were leaving the one in the cove.
Yeah.
The CTC berthing one, the commercial float, and then two on the end.
Oh, I didn't understand that. I thought you were talking about the two... punt float. They used to be called the punt floats, which were always part of the, they were not part of the seasonal. They were in all the time until a couple of years ago. I'm confused as to, okay, Christine's got her hand up and then Mark.
I think we need to have a repeat on that motion.
Right, yeah. I'm trying to get a clarification right now. Mark?
I'm going to have to rescind my second because I misunderstood Bo. I'm not in favor of leaving the two on the end. I'm only in favor of possibly testing and sacrificing the ones inside of the Islander.
Inside the Islander?
What we call the punt floats, the one that has the ladder that goes down to them, the metal ladder.
Yeah, sorry, Bo. Even though I realize that the metal pilings are probably not in great shape or even good shape down by the mud, I don't think we should, in my opinion, I don't think we should leave any of the floats off on the end by the breakwater. If we're going to try this and see if what kind of a, you know, early part of the winter we have, I think the, probably those two floats, right as you're walking to get onto the island or to your left that you have to climb down the ladder on, would be my choice, that's all.
Beverly has her hand up at the moment.
Okay, yes, Beverly.
Go ahead.
It's actually vegan.
Oh, that's great. Because you guys don't have good internet either. Okay.
I mean, honestly, I've been with my 10-month-old all day at work today, and so I needed some baby-free space, so I came over here.
I'm here.
But the one thing that I just want to buzz in on, the one of the last conversations I had with Marjorie was in relation to this, and she kind of touched upon the fact that a few years ago, and every year this discussion does get raised, and a few years ago, we did agree to leave the ramp and some floats out, and they got damaged. And then there was a lot of issues that had to be dealt with after the fact as a result of that. Today, Janara was in, and we briefly had this conversation about this discussion coming up today, and his support in it was very similar to what Mark just said, was that not the ramp and any floats after it to be left in, but the float that is directly in front of CTC that a few people leave their boats in, and the one that's in the cove that is only really accessible around the tides. And so I'm not trying to speak for him or for Marjorie, but I just wanted to kind of provide that information that, you know, they seem to both be in support of having those two floats be left in the cove and not necessarily the full ramp or any of the floats that I think are being discussed right now.
Thank you very much, Vika. Okay, Bo, and then I'm going to wrap this up.
All right. So the ones that are behind the CTC boat, is there, there's two there? Shows you how much I use them. All right. So my motion is to leave the one in the cove, the two behind the CTC float, the CTC float, and the one in front of the CTC float. And the ones at the end behind the wave break to be all taken out.
Okay. Will somebody second that? And then I'm going to kind of restate it. Okay. All right, so Mike has seconded it. So the motion is that we will remove the seasonal floats that are inside the wave break. We will keep in the commercial float, the CTC float, the float in the cove, and the two smaller floats, which used to be known as the punt floats, which have the metal ladder going down to them.
Correct.
And those all have letter names, but I don't have a plan in front of me. But
yeah,
so is everybody on the, Chris, did you get that? Okay. So is everybody, anybody on the board have any more questions about the float? So we have, is that clear to everybody what we're suggesting? Okay. So is there anyone in the audience who wants to weigh in on this before we vote? Seeing none. Oh.
Nope.
I didn't say it fast enough. Okay. Vika Wood is first, and then Ralph Monroe is second. I tried, Mark. I tried to go fast. Vika.
So there was a brief discussion about whether it was going to be only islanders, only non or non-islanders included. Can you just clarify whether this is going to include everybody or island residents, and so forth?
Well, I think that that's a whole other discussion for another time, who uses it. Because right now, they're open to everybody. And this is just personally, I think we need to vote on this, and then if it seems to be a problem, then we address that at another, at the next meeting. We have actually have an agenda item. I mean, this isn't even really an agenda item. It's just, we got a letter a couple, like yesterday, and we're responding to it. So it's not the best way to do it. So what we can do is, if people want, you know, if they get in touch with me next week when I'm making the agenda, I'd be happy to add something to the agenda if they can give me good rationalization for it. But right now, I don't think that we are equipped to make that decision. At least I'm not. Mark?
Donna, just very quickly, if a policy like that was going to be considered, I think it should probably, or an issue like that was to be started for discussion, it may want to start with the Coastal Waters Commission.
Yeah, this is a much bigger issue, I think. So that's a possibility too. Somebody needs to write us a memo if they want us to follow through with that. Ralph, you're next, and then Aaron Rue.
Okay, Ralph. Ralph, you should unmute and you'll be all right.
Can you hear me now?
There you are.
So my point is exactly that. The seasonal floats are coming out that the non-residents can tie up to. They've paid for them, they've got everything out of them. What I'm asking for, and other people I think are asking for, is the continued use longer than normal. And I don't think there's anybody that goes back and forth in Elkwood that doesn't understand that this is going to be a problem, because if you go to Cousins Island and count the boats over there that come over to Shebig on a regular basis, there's not enough room. So I don't see the problem with making it a resident only usage at this point. If you think you have to go to Coastal Waters, please do it, but please do it quickly, because it is going to create quite an issue.
Okay, thank you for your input. Aaron Rue, and then Justin.
Hi, great. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
I'm clear.
Okay, thanks. I did reply to Jonathan's letter and CC'd all of the board yesterday with regard to this conversation. And to pick up on Michael Porter's note, yes, it was because what it is morphed into is that every time we don't take them out, we end up with some weather. But this is a strange year. One of our members yesterday, who didn't take his punt over, ended up as number 32 on the Independence. And that number 32 number is arbitrary, set by CTC, and will cause significant issues coming up. So this has been on our radar for a bit. We have canvassed the members. As far as the Coastal Waters is concerned, we kind of feel as though sometimes it may be necessary to step up, and understanding that there is risk, and anything with a gangway like there is there is subject to a fair amount of damage, quite frankly. So, you know, from the Coastal Waters perspective, we understand why we would want to have floats. We would also encourage that it be for island resident use only, because we have a big issue with contractors using both the Cousins Island float and the island facilities. And if we do this, the fewer boats on there during a storm, the better. So I guess from our perspective, while it's your decision, you know, these are tough decisions we have to make. And I do believe that at this point, or I shouldn't say I believe, but we agree that there'll be more punts in the water this year than there would normally, at least until we have more ferry capacity. And again, that number is not limited by the Coast Guard, it's limited by CTC. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else have something based on this agenda? Oh, yes, Justin.
I just wanted to point out that more or less, because you have a policy on this, your vote is basically directing me to tell the staff to leave certain floats in, because it's not an agenda item. It wasn't published as such. So basically you're directing me as the town administrator to tell the staff to make a certain action, which would normally be within the staff's purview. if we change the policy about some other items, you may want to publicize that in agenda so that the people that have an interest in it have an opportunity to come and comment before you, because as was brought up before, none of this was really brought up on the agenda. So there are many people probably on the island or even on the mainland that may want to, may have their own opinions about what you should do on this. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I guess where I'm coming from personally is, having been involved in this since the beginning, when I first heard this, read Jonathan's letter and saw today when Justin showed me the policy and it said seasonal floats, I immediately, all I thought about were the ones that are inside the wave break. Because to me, except for the last year or so when they actually hauled out those other two, those had been kept in year after year after year. So I guess to me, maybe that's something we need a definition of what seasonal floats are and which ones, so that we don't have to keep revisiting this issue. The other issue about who can use it definitely needs to be on an agenda. If you're going to start excluding people, because people who paid for the tie-ups, they paid them, all of those floats are intermingled. They used to be you signed up for a specific float and people weren't paying attention to it, the float that they were signed up to, and they were going wherever they wanted. So finally it just became open to anybody. So some of those people who have, who don't live here may actually have a valid sticker on their boat. I don't know whether they do or not, but anyway, that's where I'm coming from personally. Okay, Bo, and then we're getting ready to take a vote.
I think we should put this on a future agenda as far as, you know, more discussion on this, and whoever uses it. And then, you know, I'd like to move the question, to move this along.
Yes, I think we definitely need to. Mark?
Sorry, I'll be very brief. I would just encourage Justin to consider having a conversation tomorrow with Gennaro, our harbor master, about trying to manage this situation for the term that it is going to happen, meaning lacking a policy, which we will not have tonight, certainly, of who can use these floats that are left in, who can tie up at them. I would encourage the Justin and the harbor master to have a conversation about Gennaro managing that situation. There's at least one boat that's fairly big that comes back and forth from cousins to our floats. And I think with the harbor master's help, talking to individuals, hopefully until we, or if we look at this situation in the future, he can help manage that situation for the people.
The other thing that would be helpful, if you could circulate, ask Gennaro if he could circulate a list of people who actually have permits up there. And because we may have people actually who live here who, it would not be out of the realm of possibility that there are people who didn't actually get a permit this year. But if people bought a permit, then we can't exclude them. So I will definitely put this on the next agenda. It would be helpful if people could, if people feel strongly about this, if they could just put it in writing ahead of time, that would give us some input. So now we're going to call the question. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Damons, yes. So it's unanimous. We're asking the town administrator to clarify the definition of the seasonal floats and to keep in the commercial float, the CTC float, the two punt floats, and the one in the cove. Do you have anything else? Justin.
The last thing was the communication from Jay Corson about the tax acquired property committee, which I think was in your packets.
Yeah, thank you. We didn't get that in time to get it on the agenda. Is it okay if we put that on the next agenda, Jay?
Sure.
Okay.
There's nothing that's particularly
time sensitive. Right. I appreciate you getting that done. Thank you. All right. So the next, anybody else have any communications? David.
Now, this will be brief. This is from the COVID testing team, and it's just some statistics that I think we should recognize. In June, we had 2 tests. In July, 37 tests. By the way, these are not people. These are tests. So some people were tested more than once. So June 2, July 39, August 24, September 31. October was a nice month, only 13. But the month of November saw 95 tests being run. So it's a total of over 200 tests that have been run by that team. And I just would like to express our appreciation to the COVID testing team and the doctors who have made this happen. I think they're doing a great job in helping to keep this island safe. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, David. Yes, Bo.
Just a couple of things for communications. I got called by Dave Stevens about the work that the Public Works did in that area. It doesn't seem to be working correctly. I don't know exactly. I was wondering if the board's okay with me going over there tomorrow morning, visit with him to look at it, not only as an official, but as Big Sand and Gravel.
I guess what I would say, Bo, is you either have to go as a selectman or you have to go as Shebig Sand and Gravel. You can't go as both.
I'm going to look at what the town did, and then I'm going to.
I guess what my suggestion would be is take Justin with you there because he's the road commissioner, and he could be the town, and you could be Shebig Sand and Gravel.
Sounds like a plan.
How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Want to just call me in the morning, and we can set up a time.
Yeah, we'll do. And the second thing is I saw Erica on the boat the other day. I just asked her about how the work was going on the texting and email island alert. And she told me that it was on the website and stuff. I don't know exactly how that works, but Justin might know more.
Justin and Chris are probably trained on it.
And Erica has her hand up.
Okay. Do we want to hear from Justin first or then go to Erica? Which do you want to do?
Erica can speak to it if she's here.
Okay, Erica. Thank you.
Hi. Great. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes.
I was looking for my moment to give that update, Bo. Yes, I'm very excited to report back that Justin and Chris and Vika, we met this morning, so hot off the presses. We do have a built community alert system for the town of Shebig Island. And we were testing the final kinks and talking with the team today about whatever we need for the final training and clarifying any questions. But as of, I don't know, we finished at 11 o'clock this morning, we will be rolling it out tomorrow. So any of you who are super excited about the stuff, you can sign up tonight. There will be quite a bit of communication to encourage people and educate people about what it is, but it really is as simple as all of you and anyone who's interested in getting alerts from the town will go to the town's website. And if you go to the right column, you'll see sign up for email alerts, where you put in your email address. And then a box that says sign up for text alerts where you put in your cell phone number. And then from that point forward, it's a matter of Justin and the team determining what constitutes news. But it is technically launched as of now and we'll roll it out tomorrow. And I'm happy to answer any questions and I'm so excited about it. Thanks.
So would a good example be, we have a storm this weekend. There's a tree down on Firehouse Road. So they could put out an alert to say there's a tree down on Firehouse Road, local traffic only.
Exactly.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, the system is as good as the people who sign up for it. The CTC has been an excellent community leader, kind of paving the way in the culture of how communication goes. They have several thousand, took time, that Carol and CTC reported. It takes time for people to sign up, but as soon as we roll this out and all of you are super enthusiastic and encourage your neighbors, Eliza, Jane, and I will also, and I might talk with you, Arnie, who wants to work with me on this, but we'll be going through kind of high touch through the phone book for people who may not be comfortable with this, and we're happy to personally call folks and get their permission and sign them up if they're not comfortable. But it is a very simple process. But yes, as soon as the system is populated, it's there for emergencies, and it's there, you know, you don't want to overuse a system like this, but it's what we talked about is it's being built for COVID as part of the Keep Maine Healthy grant, but is absolutely an asset that the town will have well beyond this, that could be for road announcements, or if the transfer station is closed for a funeral, if there's a, God forbid, a tsunami or a fire or an oil spill, but you know, those types of things.
Thank you. So you're not going to put our birthdays on there?
That I would not recommend that kind of news, but that's going to be at the will of Justin and this most excellent Board of Supervisors.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, any more communication before we vote on the minutes and get to probably heading out of here? All right, so seeing no other communication, the next item on the agenda, could I have a motion to approve the minutes from November 18th, 2020?
I move.
Okay, moved by Jay and seconded by Bo.
Yep.
All right, so Mr. Beaupre.
Yes.
Mr. Corson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Dyer. That's all right, we have to shake it up a little while. Ms. Damon is yes, so it's unanimous. Is there any other business that we want to bring before this board? All right, seeing none, thank you all for your participation. We had two or three things we didn't plan on tonight, which made this go a little bit longer, but it is what it is. Mark, you had your hand up?
Yeah, motion to adjourn, and welcome to Justin being our new TA.
Second, and I hope he doesn't run away screaming.
All right, so we have a motion and a second to adjourn. Mr. Beaupre has disappeared off the face of the earth here. What happened to him?
He escaped early.
I could have sworn I heard him say yes. Well, there he is.
Oh, there he is.
There he comes.
What happened, yes. Bo?
I don't know. Internet.
You can be the poster child for our problems. Yeah. I can't wait for you to do one of those speed tests. Mr. Corson.
Yes.
Mr. Dyer.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Ms. Damon. Yes. And good night, everybody. And thank you again. Thank you for sticking with us.
Thank you.
Night.
Night, all.
Good night
to the 11 attendees.